ever find, the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the latest Wicked Chops podcast. I'm Chops. Special guest today, Taylor Cavey. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
It's been an interesting day. You know, we're going through the process of setting this up, and I'd say 30 minutes before we start recording this, a bombshell, in a good way, Group Bernard Tappy acquires Full Tilt Poker. It's done. Can you believe it?
You know what? I'm not going to believe it until the money's in my bank account that I kind of had locked up. But no, I believe it, and I am happy that it's finally here, and it's nice to see it on, you know, Yahoo just reported it. It's pretty exciting.
You got like what, maybe like $10-$20 locked up when you were grinding Sit and Goes?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually didn't have nearly as much locked up as I could have, but. Well, you know, your bankroll fluctuates, obviously, yep. And I was, I guess, fortunate enough to not have to have a downswing beforehand. But, yeah, so it's a good day for me, for sure.
So have you – you've had a chance now to kind of read through this and see some of the details. It looks like – and this is probably good news for friends and people we know, but it looks like there's going to be no further prosecution of shareholders, which – on one hand, makes sense because there probably shouldn't be, but on the other hand, it's just good news because industry really didn't need any more bad news. Does that surprise you?
You know, I'm not a lawyer, so I guess like the fact that it doesn't really—I guess it does kind of surprise me. Like, I don't really know exactly how these like cases work typically when there's like the DOJ prosecuting people, but. I guess the fact that, you know, that the money that Full Tilt got bailed out and people are getting their money back is enough for them to kind of move on that side of the case. So, I guess, I don't know. It's just good news all around.
Yeah, it's good news all around. We first started looking at this. We could not understand for any reason, shape or form, why Tappy would go through with this deal. And then we started looking at the numbers a little bit more deeply and what they could potentially get on a return and if they got creative with how they structure some deals. And it actually made some sense. And, you know, particularly we felt like it made some sense if, one, they negotiated with the DOJ to re-enter the U.S. market, obviously partnered with a brick and mortar when it opens up here, which I still think is a big long shot, but a possibility. Or two, if they just went the route of every other, you know, major European poker room outside of Stars and open up a sports book. What do you think as, you know, somebody that, you know, made a good living, spent a lot of time on Full Tilt, what do you think their chances would be on getting back into the U.S.? Slim?
Again, you know, I don't know exactly how this stuff works, but my gut tells me that it's somewhat slim. Now, again, you said yourself that it didn't seem like the deal made a whole lot of sense, you know, from some angles, especially given that we didn't think they could get back into the market. So maybe that group knows something that we don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like it, like everything that I've read makes it people believe that PokerStars and Full Tilt and the companies that have kind of like been in the gray area for so long are going to have a difficult time getting back into the market. So, but that's the thing. I mean, even if they don't get back into the market, it could still very well be that over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, they think they can earn a great return on their money outside of the United States if they open up a sports book or, you know, gain a little market share, you know, outside of the U.S. So I guess you just really don't know, but it would surprise me if they came back into the U.S. market.
So for our listeners that aren't familiar with some of your background, you co-founded Card Runners back in, was it 2005?
Yeah, 2005.
After you'd been more or less crushing online for a couple of years?
Yeah, so, you know, basically just the same story as most of these internet kids. I started playing in college in, like, 2003, shot up the stakes. In 2005, I started Card Runners just, you know, to try to teach people how to win at online poker. And, it, you know, one thing led to another, and it's sort of, we got out ahead of the demand for poker education, and, you know, it got into a pretty big site over the years.
And you've launched some other ventures along with that as well, correct?
Yeah, so I'm last few years I've been working on Hold'em Manager, which is the poker software, and it's really popular. It's used by a lot of online poker players, and we purchased it from the guys that wrote it originally. And then about 2 months ago, I started a new site called DraftDay.com, and it's DraftDay is a daily fantasy sports site where you can actually play for real money. So you play fantasy sports for real money. But it's one-day-only games as opposed to season-long leagues. So it's kind of a new spin on fantasy sports.
So, for example, then, during and this is NFL, NBA, what sports are you covering?
So right now it's NFL season and NHL because those are the only two major sports that are in season right now. As soon as the NBA gets its act together, we'll have NBA games. And we're building college basketball right now. And we'll be building golf and soccer, and college football will be ready for next college football season.
So basically, if I wanted to, you know, with some of my friends, some of my coworkers, go into draft day, we would pick our team for – we would just draft our single team for Sunday's games or this week's games because I guess there's a game tonight. And we'd put money on it and just have a one-day fantasy competition.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And people are always everybody thinks about fantasy sports as like, okay, it's a season-long thing. It's with my friends. You know, I draft a team. I manage it for the entire year. And to be honest, that works pretty well for football because it's only one day a week mostly of games. And you just, you know, you think about it on Sunday morning and you kind of forget about it during the week. And it works. But when you're trying to play fantasy baseball, for example, like, do you really want to manage a team for, like, you know, 5 months? Or 6 months every single day.
Yeah, it's a grind.
Fantasy basketball, it's a freaking grind. So it's kind of cool, especially for those other sports, to get on there. And, it's, you know, say it's a Friday night and you want to watch some NBA. You know, you can draft a team in 5 or 10 minutes, and you got to sweat, and you can play against your friends, and you get paid out that night. You know, it's pretty cool. So I think it's something that people are pretty skeptical about because they just never have gotten into it before. But I actually think this is where the fantasy sports industry is headed. Because it makes it more easy for casual fans to play.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like it kind of appeals, particularly if you're a little bit more of an action junkie, kind of appeals to that too. It's like an instant gratification.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, who doesn't like instant gratification? You know, like, if you play a game, you know, you don't have to, you know, you think fantasy football. You draft a team in September, and you get paid out in, like, January or December. You know, it's like, not that it's not fun, but, like, it's not nearly as exciting as if you draft a team and then 2 hours later you win in cash. So it definitely appeals to the action junkies. But at the same time, you know, for example, my girlfriend's on there. We play a fantasy football game every weekend, and she's not a sports fan. But now that she knows I'm watching it every weekend, and she has no idea who these players are, but she's starting to get familiar with them because the site, you know, makes it very easy to learn about the players and see their stats and it's one of those things where I think it's going to draw more casual people into the games, and that's the part I'm most excited about.
You got your girlfriend playing fantasy sports?
I never thought I would see the day where I was doing that, but my friends from my fantasy sports league give me shit about that for my season long league.
How can they give you shit about it when? I mean, that's actually pretty. We've got in our fantasy football league. One of my friends that's involved with it's got his wife in the league, and when she expressed interest to sign up, I texted him and said, "Your wife is winning Wife of the Year honors," just because it's kind of cool to get a girl involved with that.
Well, no, it is, but I sort of think like so in my season long league, we take it very seriously, and we all get together. You know, some people live outside of Chicago, and they'll, like, fly in for the draft. Like, it's kind of like a guys' weekend type thing. And, you know, it definitely would be a little bit of a no-no to, like, have your girlfriend hanging around that whole weekend. That being said, like, I think they think it's probably pretty cool that she's taking an interest in it, and it's a much less of a commitment to play, like, a one-day thing as opposed to the whole season. And you know, the problem with my girlfriend in particular is she probably would get bored of it, or she wouldn't set her lineup one
sure.
week and everyone would be pissed. It's cool. And I just think the biggest point is that it's so simple and easy that it's bringing people into the games that never would have played before. And maybe in the same way that online poker brought people to play poker that never would have taken the time to go to the casino and, like, learn how all that works. And I just sort of think that's what's going to happen with fantasy sports.
Are you playing any – I mean, obviously you can't hear, but I don't know if you've traveled elsewhere. Are you pretty much just done playing online poker?
Yeah, for now I am. I haven't played a hand of poker, not one hand, since I busted out of the main event in July.
Wow.
So it's crazy. That's the longest I've gone since I was probably like 15 or 16 years old, I would say.
When were you playing pretty regularly before Black Friday?
I wouldn't have called myself a professional at that point. I mean, I was playing, you know, high stakes and more than the average person would be playing poker, but it was more of to try to stay sharp and stay in the industry and kind of stay in tune with how things are going in the games, and not as much and for entertainment as much as it was to make money.
What over the years, from, as you know, you mentioned you grinded your way up pretty quickly to higher stakes. What were some of the biggest changes that you saw in style of play from, you know, let's say 2003 to, you know, through 2010? Because it feels like play has evolved dramatically over those last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The game, if you took the games at, like, when I was playing high stakes regularly, say I was, like, playing a 25-50 or a 5100 game, I would say the level of skill at those games back then is probably equivalent to, a $25 buy-in game now.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. So you're thinking about a $10,000 buy-in game 7 years ago equal to a $25 buy-in game now. That's just, I mean, that says a lot. But really, the main difference is that people are playing much more selectively pre-flop, and they're not, you know, they're not playing trash hands.
Yeah.
And back in the day, you know, they'd be calling raises with whatever, I mean, really anything. And that just has changed, and people are also, they're bluffing selectively, they're not tilting as much. Like, it's just across the board, the game has gotten a lot harder.
Back in the day, who were some of the tougher guys that you were playing against that ended up transitioning well to the live game?
I mean, one that stands out is Prahlad Friedman. He was one of the first to really make a lot of money playing online poker.
Right.
But he was also a live player. He had won a bracelet before I ever played him. He had already won a bracelet, and he already won a lot online. So, you know, by my book, that makes him an accomplished player online and live. And he's definitely, you know, we've seen him on TV in the World Series. He's plays in some of the biggest cash games. He's the one that stands out. There's, you know, like guys like Tom Dwan, for example, was, you know, a regular in the games in, you know, 05, and obviously has gone on to become, like, probably the most famous internet player. Phil Galfond's another guy. There's just, you know, there's tons of guys. A lot of the live players, the guys that didn't know who they were in real life, but I knew they were live players online, I think that the guys that have fared better are the ones who were known as online players and transitioned to live, as opposed to a lot of these live guys that tried to transition into online. It just, from what I've seen, it hadn't worked.
Let's circle back to the Tilt Tappy deal. You, card runners, while a lot of people in the industry assumed, including me, that card runners was acquired by Full Tilt, that wasn't the case. It was actually more in the partnership realm, advertising exclusive, correct?
Yeah, no, the Full Tilt, they never had an ownership interest or anything like that. It was just simply an advertising relationship.
Did you get to know, you know, not necessarily the inner workings of the company, but assuming you got to know, individuals or people at the company pretty well, right?
Yeah, definitely some people. You know, it was always like, you know, obviously they were located outside of the country and we were, you know, in Chicago. I didn't really, I think I had like a very close relationship with very many people, but I think probably more than most, just because it was always such a kind of a secretive organization.
Yeah, so when, you know, when Black Friday hit, and, you know, for a lot of us, the biggest shock was just that Stars and Tilt could have been so careless to have allegedly acquired an interest in that bank in Utah and committed, allegedly, bank fraud. But as it went on, and Stars handled their business, and Tilt happened with. Were you surprised, just based on, you know, what you knew of the organization and what you're there, that it could have been so poorly managed and gone downhill so quickly?
I was surprised. It's actually been a really good learning lesson for me, because with hindsight, I don't think I should have been surprised. Yeah. I think I sort of learned to never really discount that, like, seemingly crazy, unlikely scenario. And I think in my head, I just thought, okay, it's a company that has hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues, and these are, like, verifiable facts. Like,
right.
We know there's hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues. Therefore, if something crazy happened like this, or, you know, whatever was going on with, like, money or alleged money seizures or whatever it happened, like, you just think, okay, well, there's so much coming in, they've got to have, like, you know, wiggle room or excess money. And I think it's just kind of silly to assume that, just because, you know, the way something should be is that's the way it actually is. And I think, like, so I guess it's a long-winded way of saying I was very surprised, and I just think I learned a lesson from it.
Were there, you know, over the years, were there any red flags to you that maybe, you know, things weren't as sound as they seemed?
No, not really. I mean, again, it's easy with hindsight to say, oh, well, you know, there were times where communication wasn't as great as I wished it was. You know, it'd be hard to get an answer on something, or it might take longer, or whatever. But, like, that's not really, I mean, that's just business sometimes too. You know, that happens, like, you know, who knows what's going on the other end. And I don't really have anything that I can say, you know what, I should have read that sign more. It's more just, this, you should not just generally trust that everything's going to work out. And I think I just definitely did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of business lessons to be taken away from this tilt situation, and somebody is going to write a really interesting book on it. Sometime. It's just absolutely amazing that it went down as bad as it did, but then I think almost equally amazing that this deal today is official. It's officially official. And that, you know, there's actually a real chance now that players can get their money back in the U.S. and globally, of course, too. And that the brand itself will continue to exist. I, you know, 3-4 months ago, I would have put it at a, you know, 10% chance, and even a couple months ago, probably, you know, less than 50% chance. You know, we had written about it, but it's amazing. Good day for the industry.
Yeah, amazing, amazing day. And, like, I'll tell you one thing. I just wrote off the whole thing in my mind, probably, I would guess, like, 3 months ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't have any inside information, and I just, you know, I'm the same boat you're in. And I just thought, you know what, I got to stop stressing about this, because it's bringing me down. And I'll say one thing, man, it's a good feeling to, and again, you know, we've had these ups and downs. How many times have we seen articles come out where it was like, everything's going to be fine, and then, like, nothing happens for, like, a month.
Right.
And so I guess, like, I'm still, in my own mind, just going to say, you know what, I'm going to wait until, like, that money's in my bank account, or until, the, you know, the players have their money, or until there's, like, the DOJ says something. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too much of a skeptic now.
Yeah. I'll tell you who's probably the happiest guy right now is Tom Dwan. He will not be giving all that money back.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, you know what? Like, what he did was pretty commendable, to say he'd give back every single cent he made from Full Tilt if they didn't pay out. And I hope for his sake that they do all pay out and he doesn't have to worry about that.
Do you, are you disappointed that more people didn't speak out or take a stand like Dwan, or does that not surprise you?
I don't think it surprises me. And I think part of the reason is that nobody knows what the laws are. You know, like, no one has any idea what legally they should or shouldn't say. What, like,
right.
These laws are so gray that, like, what's the, you know, there doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of great reward for sticking your neck out and saying, oh, this is what happened, this should have happened, or anything like that. Because, you know, people were saying that because Tom Dwan was saying that he was going to give back the money he made, it might make him, like, liable for, like, future lawsuits, or, you know, I don't even know if legally that's even true or not, but, like, that's crazy to me. If, like, someone's trying to do the right thing and then that opens them up for, like, more damage, and I think people were worried about that, and frankly, I can't blame them.
Yeah, yeah, a little life lesson for you, Taylor. People suck. You try and do something good and you get screwed. No, yeah. But no, I agree. I was, you know, kind of equal parts. I was kind of equal parts disappointed that there weren't more people out there being vocal that were associated with the company. But, you know, again, to your point, you just don't know legally what you're opening yourself up to. And, you know, particularly as we've seen so many lawsuits just flung at Tilt and Tilt shareholders' ways over the last, really over the last few years. But since Black Friday, you know, there's been the class actions, multiple class actions. So you just got to – it put everybody in a – in a bad spot where even, like you said, if you want to do the right thing, maybe you almost get punished for it.
For sure.
Yeah. So you're in Chicago, and you it's an interesting time for Chicago sports because the Bears are exceeding expectations significantly. A team that I just don't understand how they're doing as well as they do, even though lately they've looked better. And you know the Cubs are Cubs have Theo Epstein now. And how big of a Chicago sports fan are you?
Pretty big. I'll say one thing: I have completely written off the Cubs for presumably the rest of my life, just because I was such a big baseball fan growing up, and I played baseball a lot and all that. They just every year break your freaking heart, and it's like I'm done with the Cubs. So maybe Epstein coming on is going to change that, but. As far as the Bears go, yeah, I'm a big Bears fan, and honestly, I think the Bears, what they do well is not really that exciting, and except for Devin Hester, and it's like people, do you really want to like root for, or do you want to really kind of get excited about a team that like plays solid defense all the time and has like great special teams all around, like. And obviously Cutler gets a lot of shit, but like Cutler's a pretty good quarterback. He just had absolutely no offensive line for a couple of years, and their offensive line's playing great, but it's not really that exciting. So I think people like nationally don't really give the Bears a whole lot of credit.
I think if Cutler wasn't just so unlikable,
yeah,
I think that's a big part of the problem, at least with this current iteration of the Bears. I mean, he's no McMahon, you know, a guy that you just inherently kind of liked and wanted to root for. I think that's a big part of the problem because nationally people love the Bears. I mean, they're, you know, especially people in like my age demographic that, you know, were coming of age when, they won their Super Bowl and Super Bowl shove. I mean, you just have positive, it's kind of hard not to like the Bears, but Cutler almost makes them unlikable.
Yeah. He's a real jerk. That's kind of a nice way to put it. And like, you know what though? Like, I'm actually coming around to him more because I don't think he's actually like, I think his thing is that he just doesn't give a fuck and he just wants to do his thing. And like, he just doesn't want to talk to the media. He doesn't want to like explain anything to anybody. He just wants to go out there and play football. And, you know, people call him soft or they call him, say he doesn't really care. I don't think that's it. I just think he doesn't want to like deal with the spotlight. He's, you know, he even said something. He's like, I'm not out there trying to get endorsements. I'm not out there trying to, you know, sell my brand or myself. I'm just trying to play football. And part of that is just not caring what anybody thinks. So it is hard to like him, though. I will say that.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. I remember after the playoff game last year, when he's just sitting on the sidelines and he's kind of got that pout on his face and nobody understood why he wasn't going back into the game and you know, he kind of got that soft label. Dude's not soft. I mean, he takes a pounding and probably more than any other guy. I think, you know, just the bigger problem is he looks like somebody – he looks – I know he went to Vandy. Yeah, I remember when, you know, my Georgia Bulldogs played against him on, you know, 3-4 years. But he looks like somebody that would have gone to Duke. He just
he
looks like he went to Duke. He looks like he might have been in the Cobra Kai. There's just something unbelievably unlikable just about the guy. But so you're gonna keep writing off the Cubs, even though they've got Theo in charge, and things kind of look like they might be going on the up and up.
Yeah, I'm writing off the Cubs. Oh, by the way, one more Cutler story. Some of my friends were playing flag football. It was what a week or 2 weeks ago on like a Saturday morning. And it was the Saturday before the Bears were going to play the Eagles on Monday Night Football a few weeks ago. And Cutler walks by with his dog. And he's like, you know, because he lives in Chicago. Right. And everyone's like, nobody said anything to him. And like, everybody was like posting on like Facebook being like, yeah, we didn't want him to play because, you know, we didn't really think he was going to be an asset to our flag football team. The whole city was like, was down on him. They're coming around now. Bears have won 4 in a row, but that just kind of shows you that even though like he's the quarterback of the freaking Bears, like people are ragging on him about their flag football game.
That's, yeah, I can't believe that. That, I mean, you just gotta hop at the... Gotta hop at the opportunity to have a Bears quarterback play in your fantasy or play in your flag football game.
Yeah, I mean, if I was there, I would have said something to him. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, you know, with you and the Cubs, it's kind of the way I feel about the Georgia Bulldogs, where they're like constantly dead to me until they prove otherwise. And it's just frustrating. Like, you know, when you're that big of a fan of a team, you know, and you kind of emotionally invested that much, and you just can't bring yourself to root.
Yeah, I hear you.
This is brutal. Okay, so if somebody wants to take part in draft day, just go to draftday.com, and what do you do from there?
Yeah, it's honestly super, super easy. You can do one of two things. You can click on the NFL lobby or the NHL lobby. It's at the top. It says NFL, NHL. Just go in and draft a team. It looks just like an online poker lobby, so you can find your games really easily. We've got some free games. We've got some real game, real money games. Or you can just create an account on the homepage, but you can draft first, see if you like it, see if it's interesting, and that's it. You know, it's very, very easy. It takes you like 5 minutes from like getting to the site to like having your team drafted.
How curious? How much hockey action do you guys generate? Or is it surprisingly active? Because hockey is a sport that's finally seems like it's finally finding its legs here in the U.S. at least.
Yeah, you know, it's not huge. We have a couple games every day that we run. Where we guarantee, like, the prize pool is, like, $300. It's, like, a $5 buy-in, and there's, like, 60 spots in it or something.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's not, like, it's not crazy. You know, the first prize is, like, $80 or something along those lines. But there's games. I mean, if you want to go on and play for, like, you know, $5, $10, $25, you'll find a game pretty much whenever you need one. So it's pretty decent action.
Do you think... When do you think you're going to be launching the NBA application of it? Do you think they're coming back this year?
I do think they're coming back. And everybody says they're not coming back. But just with my knowledge of, like, how things work, the players have just lost their first paycheck, like, 2 days ago.
Yep.
These guys have been getting paid this whole time. And you don't really start to, you know, people talk a big game until it actually really does have an impact on them. And then they start to think, oh, shit, you know, I really do need this money. And that works just for, like, for pretty much everything in life. And particularly for these guys in the NBA that, from, you know, all accounts, stretch themselves pretty thin. So I think that the players are going to say, you know what, this is silly. You know, we're going to take a 10 or 20% pay cut, but it's better than getting zero for the next 12 months. And that's sort of what I think will happen. That's just a pulling that out of my ass a little bit, but that's kind of what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, I read, I think I was on ESPN, that the average NBA salary or paycheck, the average player lost $220,000. That's the average paycheck that they just missed a couple days ago. And I don't care if you're making $10 million or $20 million a year. $220,000, it's a lot of money. This is a lot of money. I mean, that's, you know, that's full tilt disbursement kind of money.
Yeah, that's some nice change. I would say that the average check is $220,000. I saw that too, but I wonder how much that's skewed. You know, because like LeBron's making, or the top guys are making, like, I think like $15 or $20 million a year, something along that line. And you know, there's guys that are only making quote unquote making, you know, $800,000 a year or something like that.
Right.
So those guys, you know, then again, from what I read, all these guys are living paycheck to paycheck. So I guess it really hurts all of them equally. But it's interesting. That's $200,000 for the average paycheck just seems so insane.
Yeah, I know. NBA players are kind of like poker players. Most of them are just kind of, you know, they're not as rich as or as baller as you think that they are. You know,
I think that's a lesson I learned from the poker industry too. That, and it's not just the poker industry. I think it's everywhere. Everyone always thinks that everyone else has more money than they do.
Right.
I think that's just like tried and true for like 90% of people. They probably have less money than you think they do.
Yeah, and definitely in this industry. Definitely in this industry right now. It's what do you think about the future of the industry? What do you think what we can expect, you know, if you just had to give your best guess over the course of the next you know, 2, 3 to 5 years in the U.S. What do you expect? Do you feel like, you know, reading the tea leaves that we're legal again soon and the market kind of goes back to the way that it was, or are things going to look a lot different in 5 years, even if we are legal?
I think things will look a lot different than they were once it's legal. I think it will be legal, and I think I think it'll be good in the short, for sure in the short term, that it'll be great. I mean, like if the legislation is thoughtfully done and the regulation, you know, works and the taxes aren't too high and all this, people are going to start playing more online poker. There's no doubt about it. Like, absolutely no doubt. And when there's more interest in poker, there'll be more soft money in the games. So that will create a pretty great opportunity for people that are good at poker to make money. But like anything else, I mean, like when there's a good opportunity to make money, smart people get in there and they whittle away at that potential edge, and then there's not, like, the opportunity goes away. So I feel like eventually we're just going to kind of get back to where we were in, you know, let's say 2008, 2009. And it's a, you know, it's a nice industry, but I wouldn't call it a, you know, it's not like a money tree like it was in like 2004.
Sure.
That's sort of what I think will happen.
Do you see the crazy nosebleed action coming back, or do you think that we've seen that come and go?
You know, that's a good question. If the sites can convince rich recreational players that maybe they want to spend their, like, instead of like going to Vegas and bringing, you know, 100K and playing like blackjack, that they might want to send it over to like winpoker.com or something and you know, gamble it up, then yeah, you might see that. But like a lot of the high stakes action was fueled by a lot of the alleged payments from the, you know, the poker sites to their owners. And, you know, these guys that are making a ton of money and from, you know, online poker interests, passing it around in these games. And I'm not sure you'll see that again. I mean, I don't think the price of sponsorships will be nearly as high as it was before, because these sites won't need to pay these pros as much money to get exposure, because they can just go buy ads on TV.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think the nosebleed games will be, and so from that aspect, the nosebleed games won't be as popular. But the wild card is, will guys that are rich now feel comfortable enough to go play online poker because it's legal and regulated? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and easier to get their money in and out too.
Right.
Yeah, interesting times. Good day of news in general for the industry. Thank you for joining us. That'll wrap this Wicked Chops podcast. You can download it on iTunes, or you're just listening streaming on the site right now. Look for another podcast next week where we debate the best holiday songs of all time, the worst holiday songs of all time, and cry about the loss of our favorite show community. So until then, we will see you on the next Wicked Chops podcast.